You see, I woke up this morning, I looked myself in the mirror and said, you should be nice today. But see, the way that East Baltimore is set up, soon as I walk out my front door, I gotta break down my mug and prepare to fight today. Because the kid on the playground who doesn't want to scrap always ends up with the black eye. Now I'm the angry black guy, preoccupied with the transcribe that's engraved on my brain. By the streets we've been baptized, and you wonder why we backslide. We get beat by police, they checking for drugs and guns that I ain't even packing. I'm just going to the store to get oxtails and Newports for my granny.
This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I am Grace Cavalieri, and we are on location with Kondwani Fidel, whose music is brought to us with a new album, and he has been called the best of Baltimore in Baltimore Magazine. So tell us a little bit about the music we just heard, Kondwani.
First of all, I just want to say thank you, Grace, for having me. It's a pleasure. You know, ever since I heard about you and your work a few weeks ago, I've just been a fan. And again, I'm just honored to be here. A little bit about The Mud Was Made for Us. I just wanted to do something different opposed to, you know, my traditional just a cappella spoken word. So I had linked up with a local band here in Baltimore, and they just like played me these instruments live. I just laid some stuff down. So, you know, the content that lies within these poems is kind of standard, you know, for the things that I talk about. The title, The Mud Was Made for Us, is kind of self-explanatory in a way, you know, when it comes to the situations that we, you know, face in life, right? Depending on our environment, depending on our race, depending on our gender, depending on, you know, where we come from. There are problems in this world. When you look at the lotus flower, right? Like they have to go through certain stages of, like cruel, you know, environments in order for them to become the beautiful flowers that we end up loving at the end of the process, you know?
Oh, I love that. So the lotus coming from the mud is part of your inspiration.
Yes. And
how is it different writing words for the text and then writing for music? Did the music accompany your thoughts, or did you lay it down first and then have them add music to it? How did that work?
So, first of all, it's three different types of writing in this world. Like writing for the page is one thing. Like writing a cappella is another thing.
Oh.
But then like writing words to an actual instrumental is its own third thing. Right. And they're three separate entities. So there have been times where I've had, you know, certain words written down and I kind of just, you know, spat them over an instrumental, mm-hmm. right? And the way that I say it, you know, might be influenced by the certain tunes and the certain keys and the certain strings, you know, that's being played. And then sometimes, you know, I just hear the instrumental and I, you know, feel it and I write like what I feel. So it's multiple things.
By the streets we've been baptized, and you wonder why we backslide. We get beat by police, they checking for drugs and guns that I ain't even packing. I'm just going to the store to get oxtails and Newports for my granny who shouldn't even be smoking. Life is too short. We can always identify the straw that break the camel's back, but fail to mention events that led up to the collapse. The masters of disguise. We had our trauma behind cheap liquor, Percocets, and weed. The other day I saw a tweet.
I would like to say a little bit more about Kondwani, because he is really making the news in Baltimore. And I think you got your undergraduate degree from Virginia State and your graduate from the University of Baltimore, which was your MFA in creative writing and publication, which is interesting. Can you give us a couple of poems that might be a cappella or verbal, so that we can hear the soul of Kondwani Fidel?
So I have this one poem that I can recite for you all. It is titled Real Forever. This is for everyone in my past who got lost in me or felt like they took a loss with me, claiming I ain't no different than the rest. My reply, I guess, and because I got too much pride, I add, If all men ain't nothing, I guess you gotta settle with the one who tells the fewest lies. It's either my ambivalence or my innocence that kept me ignorant, thinking I belong to you. I ain't read the syllabus when we enrolled in this crash course. Neither of us knew we were warriors in the universe's task force. Perfect is my distant cousin. My journey's rigorous. And if I die before I wake, I want y'all to remember this. Here's my truth. I'm godly. I know what it feels like to sacrifice. I used to want to be in the light. Now I'm there before it arrives. Looking out for others helps me survive. Never been a type to play games. I ain't sorry. I don't put money over integrity. Y'all are killing me softly. Some days I just want to drink and sleep and be a straight up lazy guy. Some days I don't know how to process my feelings and I start fights with my lady. Some days I'm angry. Some days they call me crazy. Some days I mistake freedom for recklessness. I drag, I flex nonetheless. I created my own lane and I stuck with it. And y'all ain't got to bump with it. But this here is my open letter. And no matter if you love it or hate it, I'm gonna be real forever.
Oh, wow. You go to the very bone. I understand why they call you. I think NPR said one of the nation's smartest young Black voices. I would say one of the nation's smartest young voices. Really, you go someplace where there's a wound. Your poetry is a context to a wound, a national wound. What is that wound, Kandwali?
I would say, you know, just growing up in a community that valued hip hop music, you know, just hearing those truths, you know, from rappers in New York or Louisiana, places that, you know, for me growing up in Baltimore, I wouldn't even be able to point out on a map, you know, the United States. But it was people there who were sharing these same experiences, right, that I was going through. And these songs, you know, this music was helping raise me, right? Like it taught me valuable lessons that, you know, people probably didn't teach me in my household or on my block or in schools, right? So, you know, when I came across reading and writing when I was an undergrad at Virginia State, right, I kind of just was mimicking with the people that I looked up to as a kid did, right? And I was just sharing that truth, right? I wasn't looking at it like, oh, I got these big ideas about race or poverty. I'm literally just sharing experiences.
That is so interesting because you aren't actually doing hip hop. You're doing a hip hop with a lyric so that yours is elevated. I think in my mind, it has a little more musicality to it. The hip hop is more staccato, but you have more added a poetic phraseology to yours. So you're a hip hop poet. I don't know what to call you, but we're so proud that you're among us. You're Baltimore's best, born and bred in Baltimore and based in Baltimore. This is The Poet and the Poem. We're talking to Kandwali Fidel. Your name alone should make you famous. It's perfect. It's a beautiful name.
Thank you.
And you also write nonfiction. And what triggered this book? What made you want to sit down for the long marathon of writing every day? What were you burning to say? What is the title of the book?
So the title is The Anti-Racist, How to Start a Conversation About Race and Take Action. And, 2020, you know, the pandemic, it just kind of made it hard for me to write, you know, dealing with just the state of the world. Losing out on gigs, which meant like losing out on money, losing out on places, you know, that I would usually seek refuge in, like going to coffee shops, you know, like my whole world was shut down. Mm. And it was hard for me to write, but I got the opportunity to write a book, you know, about the state of the world right now. And this is just how I chose to tackle that. In this book, it's the epicenter of it is about Baltimore and the experiences that Black people face here in this country, right? And as I was writing this book, I was thinking, you know, how can I teach people who come from my community about these ideas and what's going on, right? It's like this saying that say that somebody can be standing too close to an elephant, right? Which means that if you're too close to the elephant, you can't see the full elephant.
Wow.
And you got so many people like myself, you know, at one point where I got arrested for things that I didn't do growing up, right? Because of, you know, the racist police strategies in Baltimore, but I never knew what mass incarceration was, right? Like I knew that, you know, it was several people in my life who fell victim to drug abuse, right? But I didn't know that it was a health crisis, right? So it's like just teaching people about the things that go on in these communities so they can see what's, they can see how and why these realities were created.
Wow, you are saying something so important that gives us new clarity and understanding. You're saying that when you're in it, you really can't understand it, that it takes someone to objectify it for you, that when you're in it, you really can't decipher it. I think that is so important. You have said something really important today. Can we hear a page or something from your book?
Yes, absolutely. So this is from an essay that I wrote called My Home is a Noiseless Gun. And it's the last essay in a book, but it's just a piece that just pays homage to my neighborhood, the people who come from it, because I know a lot of times, you know, just again, the way that this country is set up, whiteness has always been a center of television and books, you know, so this is just a piece that, you know, it just pays homage to the people who come from neighborhoods like Baltimore and just like owning who we are, like that good, that bad, that ugly. Right. And saying like, hey, we laugh, but we cry, too. Like, hey, we beautiful and we ugly, too. Like we are all of these things. Right. And I start off with this quote by James Baldwin where he says, our crown has already been bought and paid for. All we have to do is wear it. My home is a noiseless gun. For the woman in my neighborhood who wore pink and blue hair when the whole world called it ghetto. For the young men who got face tattoos and gift wrapped their teeth with gold and diamonds before it was trendy, when people pinned it as unprofessional, gang-related, and ghetto. For the ones who willy pedal bikes through traffic and were car reckless instead of being held for their talent. For all of the young Black pioneers who are brave enough to wear their hoods on their back and rep their cities like gangs, despite the world's criticism. For the ones who have been the leading scorer on setting pop culture trends but don't get the credit from mainstream media. Not that they want it nor seek it, but it should be known. This is for y'all. This is for us. Majority of my childhood and well into my teenage years, my grandmother, along with other friends and family who belong to my community, often told me, I don't want you to end up like them. Them who pocket pistols in preparation for civil wars among their neighbors, who fail math in school but know numbers when a brick of coke is involved. Them. Them with hunchbacks who stand as if the world were glued to their shoulder blades, whose mean mugs be two-ton, who have deep stories of anger loaded in their laugh lines, them with mile-long mouths who scream after police as they bend corners and squat cars, them who stay within a three-mile radius of where they live until they die, who only attend church for funeral services, but inscribe Bible scriptures and ink and blood on their bodies, them who collect baby mamas like tennis shoes, who stand on blocks for hours and crack jokes, crack open bottles, slang crack jaws when someone cracks slick. Them who rock cruddy face tall enough for five heads. Them who say Baltimore instead of Baltimore. If you ain't none of them, then you're guilty by association, my grandmother strongly believed. My grandmother wanted to make sure that I could be as little of them and as much American as possible, because the more American I was, the more I'd be ready for the real world. Meaning I believe the white world, because obviously I wouldn't be successful at life if I wasn't one of them. And that's just an excerpt.
Oh, what year did you write that?
I wrote this. This probably was, I want to say maybe 2019.
And no one put it up for an award?
Nah.
That, don't laugh at that. That essay absolutely is riveting. The repetition, the anaphora, the phraseology, that thing is a poem. Honestly, I am deeply moved. I am moved to tears. That if every other chapter in the book is like that, that book better be read by everybody. Thank is you. It who is buying it? Who's reading it?
So ever since the book came out, I've been doing a lot of school visits, both in Baltimore, and, you know, majority Baltimore in the D.C. area. But I also did like some, you know, some Zooms and stuff in New York and in PA, you know, and it's been getting read on all levels, from middle school, high school to the college level, from undergrad to grad. So I definitely believe that it's doing the work that it's supposed to be.
What I like the most is that you have created a grandmother who we did not know before, has never been written about before, but who will live forever. You have a grandmother, you have drawn a picture of a woman who we now know and was back, she's off stage. She's in the wings of your life, but oh, wow, I love her. Was she successful?
Yeah, so I actually was fortunate enough to be raised by three grandmothers. So my grandmother on my mother's side, that's the one who adopted me when I was a baby. That's the one that raised me in her home. My grandmother Gail, that's my father's mother. And she also, like, I would spend time over there some summers or weekends or whatever. She played a large role in my life. And then her mother, my great-grandmother, Grandma Virginia, was around, you know, all the way up until she passed away when I was in high school. So I was fortunate enough to be raised by, you know, some strong Black women. And, you know, a lot of what I write about is like paying homage to them. If I explicitly mention or if I don't explicitly mention it, because I'm always talking about the cloth that I'm cut from.
I really like that a lot, because my mother used to say, marry a man who loved his mother. And I would say to the world, marry a man who loved his grandmother, because they'll treat you well. And I am so excited about your career, because I think you're getting noticed. Do you believe you're getting noticed?
Yeah, I believe that I'm getting noticed. You know, I just try to just stay grounded in that aspect. It's this Dave Chappelle and Maya Angelou interview, and Dave Chappelle was asking, you know, Maya Angelou, like, how does she deal with fame? And this isn't by far saying that I have any type of level of fame that either one of them has. But she said this quote. She said something on the lines of, if you don't pick it up, you don't have to worry about putting it down. Right. So she's basically like, if you just accept what type of praise and what type of love and what type of feedback that you want, you know, then you won't have to be scrambling and worrying what to do with it. You know, just always stay grounded. Like, remember why you started, you know what I mean? Remember who you're doing it for. You know, for me, again, I just want to just give people from my community.
Well, you're like a tree that keeps reaching up, but your roots are in your community, aren't they? Your roots will always be in your community. You will always speak for those people you grew up with.
I just want to be that same, you know, vessel that Professor Arnold Westbrook was for me at Virginia State.
I hope he hears that. I hope he hears that. We'll have to send him the podcast. Well, it is just such fun to talk to you, because you have such energy and enthusiasm. May I ask how old you are?
I'm 28.
Oh, so you're still in your 20s. That's kind of the zenith, isn't it? To be young and vigorous and energetic and talented. So read us one more a cappella poem and explain what a cappella is, please.
Yeah, so a cappella is just with no instrumental behind it, no music, no beat, just the words themselves. This poem is called Love Is Not Enough. I came up with the title of this poem. I was listening to a Kendrick Lamar song called Love, and in it he said, you know, I would rather for you to trust me than to love me. And I was thinking, like, you know, if love is this universal word that people say will stop all the problems in the world, it'll stop war, we need more love. And I was like, why would you want somebody to trust you more than you want somebody to love you? Then I started thinking about, you know, people in my life that I love, you know, but necessarily don't trust, right? Or it's people that, you know, will use the word love as a scapegoat to hurt, right? Like, they'll mentally, physically, spiritually, you know, abuse you, but then turn around and be like, oh, but I love you. And it's like, well, that ain't enough. Like, what are you being careful with me? Like, are you honest to me? You know, are you being truthful with me? You know what I mean? So this is just a piece to highlight that, you know, we need to just use more words than saying, I love you. Because if you ask 100 people what love means to them, you probably gonna get 100 different answers. So this is love is not enough. You see, I don't know much about love, but I know that in some cases, love is not enough. Love will have you chasing waterfalls and deserts. Love will have you flipping through the pages of an empty book looking for its definition. Love doesn't always equal loyalty. I understand why Kendrick said, keep it 100, I'd rather you trust me than to love me. Because what is love if the trust ain't there? Who cares about being locked in a room with him if there's always a fuss in there? You see, love will have you. Love will hold you. Love will choke you to turn around and attempt CPR without a certification. Love is an ice pick. It will poke you. Love is a pistol. It will smoke you. Love ain't always sweet like Smuckers, but it'll jam you up. That joint will toast you. Oh, you think you got jokes? Man, love will roast you. Love will have you crying 75 miles an hour to your mother at 2 a.m. in the rain with tears dripping down your chin, cognac on your breath, phone glued to your ear, red solo cup in your right hand while you gripping a steering wheel with your left. And mommy is on the other end asking repeatedly, baby, are you okay? And you can't respond because your cries are a monsoon, choking on a mixture of tears and spit, stuck in a three-way love affair. Do you take the bottle to the neck, crash the whip, or slit your wrist? Your family arrive at your peephole. They don't understand that your doorbell is only broken because your heart is. You landed the leading role. It got shaky on set. Now you don't even know what your part is. Mind missing. You don't even know what smart is. Your friends trying to get through your line, but you press ignore. Because if you tell them why you in your feelings, they going to judge you as if they never been in love before. As if they were never on drugs before. As if they ain't human. As if they ain't never been bugged before. Love will leave you broken, screaming, Alexa, play Deaf Around the Corner by Tupac Shakur. Alexa, play Madonna, Love Don't Live Here Anymore. Alexa, play DMX Slipping because I'm falling and I can't get up. Alexa, play a Baltimore Love Thing by 50 Cent. I'd rather use Pinky Nail to. Alexa, please play Cupid by Sam Cooke. Love was born a bullet. I'm hitting shock trauma. I'm shook. Alexa, it seemed like you the only God I know who answered me on demand. Alexa, why love ain't got no do right? I've been fighting all my life. But what happens when your knuckles used to rearrange jawlines? Now your bones crack when you whisper. Alexa, I just want my Cinderella and glass slipper. Why is love the game of the century? I ain't no Bobby Fischer. Love is not enough. Thank you.
Kandwali Fidel, how do you remember that with? How do you memorize that and not fear that you'll mess it up?
I always fear that I'm going to mess it up. And sometimes I do. But, you know, you just got to make it look good. And just the hardest part is being confident. Like, because you sometimes you're just going to mess up and there's nothing that you can do about it.
You didn't skip a beat there. You didn't skip a beat there. 2 a.m. in the rain. 2 a.m. in the rain. That was put to music.
Yeah.
As we go out, do you have one more piece, short or long, to leave with the audience before we go?
I do. So I'm going to do this one poem that I wrote. All right, here we go. I hug my mornings tight and share a cup of coffee with her because it might be my last time seeing her. Might not kiss her again. And I dap up the end of my long nights and say we made it before I head to bed. If pillows could talk, they have a myriad of stories regarding abandonment. Heavy hairs that used to apply pressure to feathers are now scars of the pavement. I remember I used to get on my knees and write stick figures on the concrete with chalk. And it feels like 3 to 5 business days later, the streets was taking the same dudes who once played the sidewalks. Getting embraced and traced by chalk lines. Seems like every time I check my watch, nothing but dark times. I be like, where the sun at? We went from hide and go seek to compete. This is where I keep the gun at. Run with all the wrong guys, hit a dead and then realize ain't nowhere else to run at. When the devil pull up on you, them sins you better run them. The desert eagle, they call it Kid Cudi because the birds be humming. You die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become a villain. No turning back. The monstrous ways, you got to keep them coming. Bane got to die with that name. He can't revert to Antonio Diego. They say if you live by the gun, you got to die by the Draco. Y'all adopted the mud. I was born and molded by it. I didn't see the light till I was a man. Darkness had me guided, blinded, and narrowed my horizon, but provided skin thick enough to withstand severe climates. I trekked through the tornado. I stay on the move. Just call me a Winnebago. Small cities produce the biggest hearts, so you know how we coming. Mustard seed of faith, scars the size of pumpkins. Foolish to think that I could cover scabs with scriptures, like revealing the world. My body ain't a part of my hobby. I never act like my stuff don't stink. I never act like I ain't on the brink of a war with the young boy trapped in my body that still cries for movie dates with his father and mommy. I let y'all hear the hymns from a caged bird. My poetry made a numb soul feel human again. I guess the mission was served. Thank you.
The unforgettable voice of Kondwani Fidel. This is the Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Production, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We want to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Sinibit Fund, Rivada Foundation, Avi Deshashani, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.
While poetry carries me home, hands never hit in a glass house that's thrown stones. My demons war for me when my back is against the wall. You better have the bandwidth to beef or regret not going vegan while you're resting in peace. Since people know what details my personal life, they act as if they know me. They look to see what the mirror inside me reflects. Sin's too difficult to eyeball. Sometimes I feel dead inside. Sometimes I can smell the decay when I open my mouth in the mist. Still, I gave y'all spare keys to my grandmother's house. Gave y'all floor seats to behind my peephole. Let y'all walk on my carpet wearing shoes. Lay in my bed with your soiled clothes. Gave y'all food for thought while I face famine. And sometimes I regret letting y'all. If I never shared my stories, would I be here today? Would I be pulling youths off the edge, helping them understand the importance of reading, and that popping pills ain't a portal to freedom, even if it might seem? Because in reality, you're only as free as your last lived dream. What keeps a rose's fragrance? The thorn that threatens the hand that attempts to pick it. Imagine a scent so sweet, it's worth a nose full of blood. Would a lotus flower hold its beauty if it wasn't grown from the mud?